Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we'll turn to the impeachment news. Here's a contrast worth keeping in mind as the Senate gets ready to launch the trial of Donald Trump on Tuesday. First, here's 30 seconds of Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer yesterday after all the senators took the oath of impartial justice with Chief Justice Roberts.
We've all been sworn in by the Chief Justice of the United States to serve as judges and jurors in the impeachment trial of President Trump. When the Chief Justice walked in, you could feel the weight of the moment. I saw members on both sides of the aisle visibly gulp. The weight of history sits on shoulders and produces sometimes results you never know will happen.
Senator Schumer yesterday. But never mind content for a minute. Even the tone of seriousness, the weight of history sitting on people's shoulders that Schumer referred to as palpable in the Senate chamber, is the source of mockery on the other side. One example out of many that I could have chosen, Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia. Remember him? He was the Republican leader in the House Judiciary Committee impeachment hearings last month. After Democratic Chairman Gerald Nadler opened with a similar message of gravity one day, Collins replied like this.
I do not believe, no matter what was said today and even what has been said, this is not a solemn occasion. When you go looking for something for 3 years, and especially this year since January, you ought to be excited when you found it, but they can't, because I know what is now happening. It took me last night, but I was thinking about it. Why do we keep calling this a solemn occasion when you've been wanting to do this ever since the gentleman was elected?
Doug Collins last month, just some context, especially if you've only been listening to Democrats talk. But there's an article on Politico called How Schumer Might Get the Last Laugh on Impeachment Trial. Let's talk to the writer, Politico congressional correspondent Burgess Everett. Happy Friday, Burgess. Thanks for coming on.
Of course, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Do you think the contrast in those clips, just with respect to their relationship to this as a moment in history, tells us something about the procedure to come?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does, right? Like the House inquiry, especially in those open hearings. I mean, it was really partisan. People were getting revved up. There was lots of, you know, arguing, crosstalk, all of these things that we sort of expect from Congress. And the Senate trial, there's really strict rules and decorum that at least yesterday, which is the first day of the proceedings, was being really strictly observed. Basically, nobody was on their cell phone. Nobody was talking. There was no interrupting or anything like that. And so there really was this sort of difference between the two moments. There is a contrast. I do not know whether that will continue. I mean, this trial is going to probably become sort of a routine pattern for members. I think that sort of solemnity will decrease the longer the trial goes. And once, you know, Tuesday, there's going to be a bunch of partisan votes is our expectation. Mm-hmm. And Chuck Schumer will be forcing some of those. And I think that will sort of bring us back to the base level of Democrats versus Republicans and predictable partisanship.
Go into some of that, because your article about Schumer says he will force a series of votes designed to squeeze vulnerable Republicans. What's the series of votes going to be?
Well, so basically what's happened here is 20 years ago, the Senate leaders got together and wrote a framework to begin the trial. And what they did when they did that is they punted this question of witnesses and new evidence until later in the debate. Schumer is refusing to do that this time. And so what's happened is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, okay, I have the majority. I don't need you, Senator Schumer, and went to his members. And now he has the votes to open the trial without Democrats. And so what's going to happen is Schumer's going to try to amend what McConnell's trying to do by saying, no, we needed an agreement on witnesses now, not later. McConnell is punting this question for a couple weeks. And so who knows ultimately what happens with the witness question? But initially, Republicans, including people like Susan Collins of Maine, who's on the moderate end of the spectrum, are going to vote against what Schumer is saying, which is bring in Mick Mulvaney, bring in John Bolton, subpoena documents related to the withholding of Ukraine aid and requests of investigations into Joe Biden. And that vote will fail. but there's a bunch of Republicans up for re-election in tough states, and Senator Schumer sort of sees this as a win-win. He may not get what he wants initially, but he thinks the Republicans are taking bad votes politically, saying we don't want to hear new evidence.
Well, you mentioned Susan Collins. Here she is in 1999 calling four witnesses in the Clinton Senate trial.
There is indeed a mountain of evidence, but there is also a record that is replete with conflicting statements, with significant gaps, and with unanswered questions. We need to answer those questions in order to fulfill our duty to do impartial justice. I want to be fair to the president. I want to give him the opportunity to have his lawyers question witnesses if, in fact, we get to that stage.
Susan Collins in 1999, how does that compare with her position today?
She was definitely stronger on witnesses back then. I would also say she put out a lengthy statement yesterday saying she's likely to support a debate on witnesses. And the way this is going to boil down is after the opening arguments and after the question and answer period, there will be a vote on should we have a debate on witnesses or should we end the trial now? And she's saying she's likely to vote yes on having witnesses.
So she may wind up consistent.
She may wind up consistent, that's right. But I would say, rhetorically, it's definitely a little different, and I think that reflects how American politics has changed in the last 20 years. I would also say that she ultimately voted to acquit Bill Clinton, who was the president of the opposing party.
She voted to acquit?
Yes, that's right. So I don't think we should necessarily assume how she's going to vote on any specific witness at this point, but I would also say she's the person who's under the most pressure right now on this question.
She also pointed out the other day that Chuck Schumer voted against witnesses in 1999. So can we say both sides default to their party's interest unless public opinion pushes them not to?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Chuck Schumer was in a super unique position that nobody's in right now, right? 1998, the House is conducting its impeachment inquiry. He's on the Judiciary Committee in the House. He votes for the inquiry, and he votes to impeach. Votes against the inquiry and votes against impeaching the president. He's also running for a Senate seat then, so he has to run as somebody who wants to stop the conviction of Bill Clinton in the Senate. So he had his own politics in mind when this was all happening, and when you look at Senator Collins, who's up for re-election in Maine later this year, she's got the same thing going through her head.
Yeah, and in fact, I think in that unique Schumer position from them, he was in the House. He got elected in November 1998 to the Senate for the first time. The trial began in January of 1999, so he went from being in the indicting party to a member of the jury in the Senate.
Yeah, and he actually ran as the candidate to acquit. So he saw the politics in this as he was running against an incumbent Republican senator who he thought was being wishy-washy on this, and so he was saying, I'm a vote to acquit. He was playing partisan politics then, too. I mean, it's unavoidable to come to that conclusion.
Is there going to be a separate vote on admitting new documents versus new witness testimony? Like after these Lev Parnas TV interviews, Republicans might succeed in the court of public opinion in dismissing him as, you know, an indicted felon trying to save his skin. But you can't dismiss the documents he released showing things like claims of surveilling Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, which already led the FBI to open an investigation yesterday. So do you expect separate votes on witnesses versus documentary evidence?
So on Tuesday, when Schumer forces these votes, I don't know if he's going to separate these things out into different individual votes on the four witnesses he wants and the documents, or whether it's all going to be together in a package saying we need to subpoena documents related to Ukraine. So there will definitely be votes on documents, whether they are singled out and specifically sort of targeted by the Democrats, who can force votes whenever they want to, sort of remains to be seen. But what there is there's a pact among the 53 Republicans to not vote for what Schumer wants on Tuesday. Maybe after they hear the opening arguments and the question and answer period, they decide they need to hear more, but they're not going to entertain that this next week.
Listeners, we can take some impeachment news questions for Burgess Everett, congressional correspondent for Politico. 212-433-2423. WNYC, 212-433-9692. And of course, if you didn't already assume it, WNYC will carry the impeachment trial of Donald Trump when it begins, which is expected to be 1 o'clock on Tuesday and going into Tuesday evening sometime. So 1 o'clock Tuesday is the expected start of the trial. We will air it Tuesday and every day that it goes on live here at WNYC. We are expecting the start time to be 1 o'clock each trial day. Burgess, can you confirm that? Is that going to be a 1 o'clock start time each day they have a session?
Yeah, that's right. And what my expectation is right now is both parties will separately have meetings right before the trial starts. So they're, you know, this gives you a sense of the partisan reinforcement each member of the Senate is going to be getting from Schumer and McConnell. They're going to all be sort of in their separate rooms, Democrats and Republicans, getting some sort of marching orders. So it's gonna play out in an interesting fashion, in the sense that everybody's going to try to get on the same page before the day even starts.
Let me ask you about this idea being floated by some Republicans for what they're calling witness reciprocity. If the Democrats get to call Bolton and Mulvaney and maybe others, the Republicans get to call their witnesses, Hunter Biden, maybe Joe Biden, maybe the whistleblower. Who's behind that idea?
So the leading edge of that sort has been Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky, and Senator Cruz from Texas has also been pitching this. Senator Cruz had a private meeting with Senator McConnell and a handful of other senators where he pitched this. Senator Paul has been talking to Republicans at the lunch, sort of threatening them with, well, don't think you can just bring in John Bolton. You're going to need to vote on these other folks, too. What this really is an effort to make that witness vote fail and scuttle the debate over witnesses. Rand Paul's basically saying to the people who are up for re-election, you're going to have to take these really tough votes on Hunter Biden. This is not a vote. If you're Cory Gardner of Colorado, if you're Susan Collins of Maine, this is not really a vote you want to take. You know, Republicans, base Trump voters are going to want you to subpoena Hunter Biden, and independents and Democrats are probably going to think that doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's basically a way to bring the pain to people in his own party that Rand Paul is saying, and it's really intended to just head off the witness debate altogether. He told me in an interview this week he doesn't want to have witnesses, but if we're going to talk about witnesses, we're going to talk about the witnesses the president wants, yeah, too.
Well, how would that work? Would it be a deal between Democrats and Republicans for witness reciprocity votes, or would it just be a series of votes? Like if Susan Collins votes to hear John Bolton, next there'll be a motion and she and the others will have to vote on Hunter Biden.
I think the latter scenario is more likely. I have a hard time envisioning Democrats wanting to bring in Hunter Biden. I mean, their whole argument is, here's people with firsthand knowledge, Mick Mulvaney, John Bolton, two OMB officials, firsthand knowledge of why the Ukraine aid was withheld. And they're going to argue Hunter Biden has nothing to do with this. Republicans will say that Hunter Biden is the reason that Trump was looking into corruption. And so our argument is he's a relevant witness. And so I got to think 45 plus Republicans will support that. But then, you know, then you get into people who are up for re-election, people who don't want the Senate to become sort of a partisan food fight. And that's sort of where you get to the question of whether a witness like Hunter Biden has the votes to be subpoenaed.
I wonder, do the Republicans really want that deal? You know, like if the reporting so far is right and Joe Biden did nothing corrupt and the whistleblower is going to come across like a hero, like he was accurately reporting, he or she accurately reporting security professionals' concerns if the whistleblower is forced to go public, the Republicans will look ridiculous and Trump will look guilty.
I definitely think this witness thing could get totally out of hand, especially when it comes to the Bidens. I mean, can you imagine the spectacle of Hunter Biden for sure, but what about Joe Biden bringing him off the campaign trail to testify in the Senate trial? I mean, it really sort of boggles the mind to think that that's a possibility.
I have had callers who said Joe Biden should volunteer to do this because he did nothing corrupt, and the president's going to come out looking worse for his testimony at the end of the day.
Yeah, and there's an argument to that. And I know Joe Biden sort of first ruled out coming in if he was called, and then sort of equivocated and seems sort of open to it now, because I definitely do think that there's an argument to him coming in and saying, look, I had nothing to do with this. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. He first said he would defy a subpoena, and that wasn't a good look. So then he turned that around and said, yeah, if I'm subpoenaed, I'll come. Right. I mean, that's all he's done.
Right. Exactly. So, but I mean, you already have a bunch of senators who are running for president who have been pulled off the campaign trail to sit in a chair in the Senate chamber for 8 to 10 hours a day. Then if you have the person, another person that they're running against being either deposed for testimony or testifying live in front of the Senate, which is possible, although unlikely, I don't know how anybody ends up looking good if that is the result.
Let's take a phone call. George, you're on with Burgess Everett from Politico. Hi, George.
Good morning. Question for you. The president of the Senate, of course, is the vice president. At the time that the Constitution was being considered and ratified, the vice president and the president were elected separately. That didn't happen until the election of 1803 that they combined them as a common ticket. Now, does the Constitution, in discussing impeachment, in any way discuss a role for the president of the Senate? Were there laws that subsequently changed with regard to that? It's very clear that the pro tem was the one who swore in the Chief Justice rather than the president of the Senate. But I'm just interested.
Right.
I have heard no discussion of such a thing at all.
I think the answer is, yes, the vice president usually presides over the Senate and can act as a tie-breaking vote if it's 50-50, but the vice president has no role here. That role is played by the Chief Justice. Is that correct, Everett?
Yeah, that's
Burgess,
right.
Burgess, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. And there's also sort of an argument over whether the Chief Justice would play the tie-breaking role. And obviously, I've not talked to the Chief Justice about this, and nobody else in my industry has. So everybody's sort of going on guess and precedent. But everything I've heard indicates that he would not break a tie. And so a 50-50 vote is presumed right now to fail during the Senate trial.
I want to ask you about let me hold that for a second, because we have some breaking impeachment news right now. I don't know if you've seen this yet or if you can confirm it. The New York Times is reporting that the president has added Ken Starr, who was the special prosecutor in the Clinton impeachment, and Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz to his legal team for the Senate trial. Do you know that to be true?
Politico has confirmed that. Yes, that's correct.
So what role will they play? For people watching this on television or hearing it on the radio, what will they see Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr do?
So I don't know that Ken Starr has put out a statement yet since we have begun speaking, but I know Dershowitz has, and he made it sound like he will just be talking about the constitutional law component of the impeachment trial, presumably one that is friendly to President Trump and the executive branch on decision making on Ukraine aid and things like that. Now, I think a lot of people are going to say this sounds like a major spectacle to have these folks on the president's impeachment team. And I think that's probably true. But what I would also say is, we were also talking about, is Jim Jordan from the House of Representatives going to be on the president's legal team? There's a spectrum of how crazy, you know, things have been considered at this point. And, you know, the fact that they're not going with his biggest partisan defenders in the House, it does show that there has been sort of a change in direction.
All right. I want to ask you about one more thing. We talked here with David Gergen yesterday about how the Republicans might be setting up rules that will limit how much of the trial the public can see on TV. Is that a source of debate right now?
My impression is, unless we get into witnesses giving closed testimony and depositions, I think the whole thing, at least the opening stages, is going to be open and public. Now, whether that means you can play videos of the House hearings during the inquiry and things like that, I think that remains to be seen and could be a matter of debate. I would say the most important thing to remember is the number 51. 51 senators can vote to make the trial take whatever course they want to. And any senator can offer a motion to make something happen in the Senate. So it's really sort of a fluid free-for-all mm-hmm. that relies on folks to maybe be reserved and not gum up the works with a million motions. And it remains to be seen sort of how out of control that gets. But if 51 senators wanted to vote to close things down, they could definitely do that.
So that could happen in progress, not necessarily set a rule at the beginning for what kinds of things are going to be open and what kinds of things are being closed. But something's going to be next, and a senator could force a vote and see if they can get 51 votes to close to the public this next stretch of whatever it is.
Yeah, and that would likely come through either the managers or the counsel that would suggest that, submit it to the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice is not going to actually weigh in on that. Instead, he's going to put these questions before the Senate, and then a majority will rule the day.
And I should say, the New York Times has an article today that is mostly about when to go into closed session for periods of time. And to my eye, it's a fairly sympathetic article to that idea, saying that did happen at times in the Clinton trial, and many senators thought those were productive bipartisan meetings on various details without having to posture for the cameras. I don't know if the politics of today are different, but is it clear to you at all what kinds of moments could trigger closed session votes?
I would say just Schumer was asked about this yesterday, and he said he wants it to be as open as possible. So it gives you a sense that Democrats may reject those motions. I would think the closed sessions would only happen with regard to new evidence. It seems unlikely to me that existing evidence that is already out in the public would result in them going into closed session.
Are there also limits being discussed on camera angles or close-ups versus long shots or anything like that?
So they're just going to have the C-SPAN camera in there. And this is actually, you know, nobody likes whining reporters. So I'm not going to go into this too much, but there have been some very stringent new media people like
Burgess. Can you start that answer again? Because you were dropping out when you were talking about the C-SPAN rules. Say this again.
Yeah, C-SPAN will just have a camera in there, and that'll be the extent of the video coverage of the trial.
One camera?
It'll be the regular C-SPAN cameras. So, yeah. And it can go to different senators, but it's not going to be like news networks are controlling this stuff.
Right. And I read that press restrictions in the Capitol are absolutely crazy at the moment. In general, for example, many reporters hang out by the subways in the basement of the building and walk to the Senate floor with senators. Police stop you from walking up with a senator, but you can walk by yourself. Reporters are roped in on the second floor where we usually roam free. This is from your colleagues at Politico Playbook. It says the Capitol has always been a place where journalists are able to ask questions of lawmakers with almost unfettered access. It makes Capitol Hill the best beat in town, and everyone benefits from it, but not today. Is that your impression?
Yeah, totally. They were trying out these new rules yesterday, and it was not. I mean, the police to reporter ratio was maybe 5-1. There are police everywhere. They'd say, you can't stand here. You have to get behind these stanchions. You have to stand in these pens. It was definitely more strict even than we were expecting, and we were expecting it to be really strict.
And to what end? To what end? Who's ordering that and why?
We've never gotten a clear answer. The Democrats say they don't agree with it, so it's either Senator McConnell or Senator Blunt, the Rules Committee chairman, or it could just be the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, who is selected by the Republican or the majority leader, and maybe that it comes that McConnell is disinterested, but it was not easy yesterday, and we are hoping it is better on Tuesday because it makes it much more difficult to do our job.
And it's because they don't want people like you trailing a senator and saying, are you going to vote to hear witness John Bolton? Are you going to vote to hear witness John Bolton? That kind of thing.
I think that's definitely part of it. And I think also for anybody that was in the Capitol during the Kavanaugh confirmation and saw somebody like Jeff Flake getting yelled at in an elevator, I think they just don't want moments like that to happen during this impeachment trial. And so, you know, I think that they overcorrected and it's way too much. And I think they may regret it if they continue doing it, because coverage usually reflects decisions like this from reporters.
Burgess Everett, congressional reporter from Politico. Thank you so much for filling us in today.
Thanks, Brian.